If you're someone who has a passion for cut flowers, our environment, and wants to make the world more beautiful, you're in the right place. Whether you're growing flowers for pleasure or profit, I'm on a mission to empower flower enthusiasts and professionals to help change the world around them. Whether you're just starting out and need a helping hand, or are looking to scale a substantial flower business, I'm your cut flower woman. Welcome to the Cut Flower Podcast. I am delighted to welcome Manoj Maldi to our podcast today. And Manoj is an award-winning garden designer, a TV presenter, an RHS ambassador and judge, and he has just added being an author to his portfolio. And we'll talk about that. Manoj, please do tell our listeners a little bit about you, your background. I'd love to know, was this always your dream, or what did you want to do when you were at school, and what happened, and you went off to college, and what did you do, and your journey from where you were to where you are now.
Sure. My Indian heritage and my African roots really is part of it. I was born in Mombasa in Kenya, and I have Indian roots. So both my maternal and paternal grandfathers were both from small little villages in India. So I connect with both of those very strongly. But I came over to the UK at the age of 6, and I've had most of my upbringing in the UK, but I have some very sharp memories of life in Mombasa, which is lovely. 13 years old, I always knew that I actually wanted to work in the fashion industry. And my focus was very much on that. I was always, I would say, more of a creative than an academic. My brothers were both real academics, and I was a creative one. And actually, so was my sister. So I focused on the arts more, and I went ahead, did my O-levels, and then I went straight to college. Indian. But when I was in secondary school, I will admit that I was actually bullied because I was different from the other boys. I knew, even at that age, I knew I was gay, and I was creative. I was Indian. I wanted to do different things. I wasn't interested in cars and football and girls. I was probably a little bit more outlandish than the other boys. I did like sport, funny enough, but in the sense of, and it always surprised me, I was actually picked to do the hurdles at school. And I was also picked to do the 100 meter sprint and the 400 meters for my house. Now, that's probably because I was always very good at running away from the bullies. So it probably gave me speed. And I do laugh about it now. And quite honestly, I stick two fingers up at the bullies now because I just think, you know what, you made me a stronger person and look at where I am now. So it's never bothered me that. I guess I was pretty tough that way, and not everyone is. But yeah, so when I finished my O-levels, I managed to get the grades that I needed, and I went to college to do my diploma in fashion. I passed, that was a 2-year course, and I passed that with a distinction. I then went on to do my BA honours at university. And then I went on to doing my master's at the Royal College of Art, which was amazing. I really enjoyed that time in my life. And after I finished my master's, I went to Italy to work. So I've worked in a fair few countries. I've worked in Italy, I worked in Germany, in New York, in Hong Kong. And then after Hong Kong, I finally came back home. And I initially, whilst I was getting my portfolio ready again for interviews, I worked at Harvey Nichols, which was fantastic because it kept me in with what I was doing. And then I finally landed a job with a company, and my career then started progressing from there. And 18 years I spent in the fashion industry, slowly became a senior designer, then I became design manager, senior design manager, and then eventually creative director. But one of the, I guess, the biggest achievements for me within my fashion career was actually starting up a women's wear business for a company. And I turned that business around for them. And it within 4 years, that business was generating a £10 million turnover. So that was fantastic. And then after 18 years, I could see where the fashion industry was heading, and it wasn't a pretty picture. Everything was becoming about margin. And sadly, not only was the quality of the production going down, but actually the creativity wasn't there. And I just thought, you know what? I don't want to become a miserable old man in this industry. So it is now time to call it a day and go and pursue something else. And I loved working in the fashion industry. I learned so much. I worked with the most amazing buyers and merchandisers when I started out in that industry. Really incredible go-getters. They were handling big budgets and making big money for the companies that they were working for. And I could see the skill levels gradually of senior buyers declining. And that's when I really made that decision that actually, do you know what? It's now time to go and do something for myself. After 18 years, I went and spoke to the late Simon Pyle at the English Gardening School. And I said, I'd like to go into garden design. And would it be possible to do this course whilst I carry on working in fashion? And he simply asked me, Manoj, do you want to do this as a hobby or do you want to do it as a career? And I said, I'm looking at it as a career. And he said, you then need to give up your job because this course is really intense because you will be burning the midnight oil and you will be working 7 days a week to get your coursework done and handed in on time. So when I had a conversation with him, very next day, I went into work and I handed my resignation in. Giving up a job as a creative director, I was earning good money. So it was a decision that wasn't taken lightly. But what was really good was that I also spoke to my husband, Clive. And he said to me, Manoj, when you have a gut instinct, your gut instincts are normally right. And so go with your gut instinct and remember that you're in your early 40s. You're not going to make this move when you're in your 50s. It'll be that much more difficult. And I listened to that because I think he was right. That I think if I had been in my 50s, it wouldn't have been that easy. So early 40s. I jumped ship from fashion and went back to school, studied garden design, a diploma in garden design for a year. And then I went on to study for another diploma in plants and plantsmanship. That's where my journey into garden design began. And I started working at show gardens as well for other designers. And that came about through a phone call from Simon, literally as I graduated from design. And he said to me, would you go and help Dermot Gavin on his garden at Chelsea? Because you've got an eye for detail. He needs that and he needs the help. And I agreed. I said, yeah, absolutely, not a problem. I'll go and help. And so I did that. And that was my start to my Chelsea journey. And I'm so glad.
I was just going to say, I think, was it Simon Pyle?
Yes, yes.
Was he part of Psychic Gardens at some point?
Chelsea Physic Garden. They were actually located, the English Gardening School was located at Chelsea Physic Garden. Although the year that I studied at the English Gardening School, we were based in Lotts Road. So not too far from Chelsea Physic, but they are now based back at Chelsea Physic Garden as well.
I knew Simon.
Lovely.
And man. I knew Simon, lovely guy. And he was married.
Yes.
To somebody who worked at the Open University in Milton Keynes.
Oh.
And then I got together with Simon and we did some work together in marketing. I was doing some marketing for him.
Okay.
So that's really interesting that, yeah.
So funny. Simon was my guru, I have to say. He really supported me. He could see my passion, both through the creativity, but actually wanting to learn about designing gardens and using plants and all the rest. And it was funny because when I graduated from design, I said to him, one day I'd like to go and do a garden at the Chelsea Flower Show. And then I said, I'll probably go and do a garden at Hampton Court first, just to kind of get my step in there, my foot in there. And he looked at me in horror and just went, what did you say? And I said, I'm thinking about going and doing Hampton. He said, you won't do Hampton Court. You will go straight to Chelsea, my boy. And he ordered me to go and get my portfolio and open it up. And I opened this portfolio up and he just turned around and he said, look at that work. That work is Chelsea. It's not Hampton Court. And it was really funny because he really meant it. He just wanted me to actually go and do a garden at Chelsea and not to worry about anything else. So when I came to actually making that decision, it was his words that kind of went through my mind. And I just thought, you know what? He had such belief in me that actually I also need to believe in myself that I can do this. So my Chelsea journey continued, having done Dermot's garden and helped him on his garden. The following year, I helped Chris Beardshaw on his garden. It was Thursday Garden. And that was a massive learning curve. I absolutely loved working with Chris. His knowledge of plants is just incredible. But what he taught me on that garden was amazing. He taught me about the level of detail that goes into creating a show garden. And I remember quite clearly, he initially started me out on cleaning the plants and watering them and looking after all the bits and pieces. And then after that, he said, I'm going to get you to do some planting now. And he took me under the structure and he said, before I let you loose on this, I want you to tell me what you think happens to the plants here. And I said, the light levels are really quite low. So what I expect the plants to do is to stretch upwards, which means that the growth is going to be not only weak, but it's going to be tall and lanky. And it's not going to be strong growth. It's going to be weak growth. And he turned around and he said, spot on. Now make those plants look like that. And that was the biggest learning curve I have ever had when it came to doing Chelsea. And funny enough, in 2023, when I was creating the RHS garden there, Chris's garden was right opposite mine. And I went onto his garden and I reminded him of that. And we both had a real laugh. He said, oh my God, I must have terrified you. But yeah, it was really good. I'm so glad that he allowed me that opportunity. Because as I say, it was a massive learning curve for me. And then in 2016, I, alongside Alison Hamilton, a good friend of mine, I led the planting team on the Beauty of Mathematics garden, which was a gorgeous garden designed by Nick Bailey for Winton. And yeah, so I worked on that. And really, it was at that point that I knew that I was ready to make a submission to the RHS to do a garden at Chelsea. And so I made my submission and lo and behold, it was selected and I created my first garden at the Chelsea Flower Show in 2017, which was called Beneath a Mexican Sky, based around the work of Mexican architect Luis Barragan. And again, with Luis's work, I came across his work on the internet and it blew my mind. I just thought, oh my God, I hadn't heard of Luis Barragan before. And I just thought, here's this amazing young architect doing this contemporary architecture, and it just is stunning. These beautiful, big, bold, rendered walls, beautiful colours. And it literally captured my imagination. I thought, do you know what? One day, I saved those images on my laptop and I said, one day I am going to design a garden with his work as my inspiration and the backdrop to just the most amazing planting. And that's exactly what I ended up doing for...
Very different. It was certainly, I looked at it on your website and it was very different to anything probably Chelsea's ever seen, to be honest.
Yeah. And do you know, Roz, the funny thing was a lot of people who, visitors to Chelsea, who've been going there for years, were saying to me, oh, I go to Chelsea every year and I'm now beginning to find that all the gardens are turning into one big garden because they all have the same colour palettes, the same plants, etc., etc. So I was absolutely determined to make sure that I presented something that was actually very different. And somebody actually has whispered in my ear, oh, don't expect the judges to understand that, because it's not Chelsea. It's too bold. It's too brash in its colours. But actually, do you know what? I'm so glad that I actually did submit it, because look what happened. It got selected and it gave me the opportunity to build my first garden at Chelsea. But I tell you something, getting sponsorship for Chelsea was probably one of the biggest challenges. I sent out so many packs to various different companies looking for sponsorship, and I got four replies back, and all four of them had basically said no. And then it just happened that I was having a conversation with one of my clients. They were property developers, and I said, I'm trying to create a garden at Chelsea, and I'm looking for sponsorship, and I'm finding it really hard to find sponsorship. So they said, why don't you get the figures together and submit them to us? And we can't promise anything at this stage, but if we can, then we'll sponsor you. If we can't, then we'll say we can't. So I did that. I submitted the figures to them. And they came back a week later and said, we can do this. We can sponsor your garden. And so they ended up sponsoring my garden, which was fantastic. And then my journey progressed, because I already had my contractor in place. That was Living Landscapes UK, Tequin Evans, who is an amazing landscaper. And I already had my nursery in place, Dave Root at Kelway's Nursery. I sent him a plant list. And I had met Dave Root at Chelsea 5 years before that. Chris Beardshaw had done a beautiful garden there. And in his garden, he had incorporated Isoplexis canariensis, a gorgeous plant. And David supplied the plants to that garden. So I found Dave and I went and talked to him, and I asked him about Isoplexis canariensis. And then 5 years later, I send him my plant list, and he literally called me the next day and said, I remember you. You were the only designer who came up to me that year and asked me about Isoplexis canariensis. And I remember thinking, here's a designer who's got a great level of taste in plants. And he remembered me, and he said, do you know what? The plant list that you've sent, I absolutely love it, and I definitely want to work with you. So I had my nursery on board, which is fantastic. And the final crux was finding that sponsor. And literally a week before I was due to hand submission into the RHS, my client said that, yeah, they'd be my sponsor. If they hadn't, I wasn't prepared to actually put that submission in, because the last thing that I wanted was to turn around to the RHS, if the garden got selected, to say to them, I'm really sorry, but I haven't got a sponsor, so I can't do the garden, which would be unfair to them as well. But luckily that didn't happen. But it was really exciting when that's, because with the selection process, obviously it goes through two different judging stages. And it went through the first judging stage and I got a little bit of feedback, but actually it was nothing overly complicated. In fact, most of the feedback was more for my contractor. And then I had to wait until October. And I remember quite clearly the day that they were supposed to let me know. And I waited and waited in front of my computer. And it was finally 5 o'clock in the evening that an email dropped into my inbox, basically inviting me to create my garden at the Chelsea Flower Show. And I have to say, I had to read that email 3 times before I actually really digested what it said. Because all I was looking for was the word unfortunately. It's always that line.
at this moment in time exactly. That's just do you think at that time when you were doing Chelsea, do you think you were always going to, we'll come on to something else now, were you always going to write a book?
Do you know what?
Do you think was in there somewhere?
I had never, ever thought about writing a book. Never. It's really weird. I write blogs, and that came much further down the line that I started writing blogs. But I had never, ever thought about writing a book. To be honest, I didn't even think that I had it in me to write a book. And then what happened was, obviously, my career, not just as a garden designer, also the whole career process, it had progressed into TV and radio and all of that. And what happened was the editor seen me on one of the programs on TV, and she rang me up and said, "You don't know me, but I know you and I know of your work. I've seen you on TV. I've been onto your website and I've read your blogs, and I've got this idea for a book, and I think you're going to be the perfect person to write this book." And at that point, I slightly chuckled and I said, "You do realize that I've never written a book before." And she said, "I know, but the way you explain things on TV, you do it with simplicity and clarity so that members of the public can actually understand exactly what you're saying. And if you're able to do exactly that with words on paper, then I think you will be able to write this book." And she said, "Besides which, I've read your blogs and your blogs are good. So therefore, I reckon you'll be able to write this book." So I thought, okay, do you know what? Look, things like this don't always come to everyone. You get these opportunities in a lifetime once. So you need to grab them. So I said, "Can we have a meeting and you can explain to me more about book writing and what my remit would be, etc." So we had a meeting, and it was at that point I just thought, "Do you know what? I'm going to go for this." So I agreed to write the book, and obviously I had to submit a sample chap. I did gulp a bit when she said, "Oh, it's about 30,000 words." And I thought, "Oh my God, how am I going to write 30,000 words?" But actually, do you know what? When I'd written my sample chapter, even that was about 11,000 words. So when that was the word count for a sample chapter, I just thought, okay, do you know what? I can do this.
It's difficult to write a book. It takes time and effort and commitment and all sorts.
It does. And you do need to shut yourself away and do the research and all of that as well. But I have to say, I really did enjoy the whole process of writing a book. And I think once you start writing, more and more ideas start coming out. And all I kept on doing was I kept on putting all of these ideas down on paper. And I have to say that I have this real respect for what editors do, because when I handed my sample chapter in and the editor went through it, edited it and moved certain paragraphs around and sentences around and all of that, and then she sent it back to me and I read it and I just went, oh my God, that flows really well. And I was really shocked because I thought, is that really my work? It is. It's all I've done is I've just moved certain things around, and she just made it flow so well. So yeah, I really do.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
A small business. Do reels get you reeling? Is SEO just a three letters put together? Content planning something you know you should be doing, but just never get round to it? Do join our Growth Club online. What is it? It's a supportive community. It's all about growing your business. It provides trainings and guest speakers join us every month. Is it time to work on your business and not in it? The link for more information is in the show notes. Book about, obviously the title is Your Outdoor Room, How to Design a Garden You Can Live In, which is quite alternative really to a lot of garden design books, isn't it? This is more about a garden you can live in, a garden that suits your lifestyle. You said something like you want a garden for entertaining, or you want to be playing in it, or you want to practice yoga in it. So it's for everybody in designing their garden in a different way.
Absolutely. The thing is, I've had a number of people who don't necessarily have the budget to engage a garden designer, but they are real garden enthusiasts. They want a beautiful outdoor space. And so what this book allows them to do is to have an award-winning designer guiding them through the step-by-step process of how to design their own outdoor space. I talk about how to do a survey, how to do a site analysis, what equipment you're going to need to actually draw your plans up, how to create a concept plan, how to create a master plan, how to go about designing pathways and your social spaces, how to then create a planting plan, and how to create a lighting plan as well, and a setting out plan as well. So that's all clearly written up in there. You can follow the step-by-step procedures. But I also go into things like how you choose your materials, the do's and don'ts of that, how to actually test your soil, how to choose your plants, how to think about sustainability and biodiversity, and also budget, because again, not everyone has the money to spend loads on a garden. So how do you control your budget? And so there's ideas about that in there as well. Simple things. Maybe you go into a nursery, they're having a bit of a sale, and they might have a big plant that isn't looking great, but actually is still alive. Is that a good investment? Yes, actually it is. Because if you buy that and then divide it into three, you then create three plants out of it. If you're prepared to look after that and nurture those plants, then actually you've got three new plants out of it. Or join a gardening club. Gardening clubs are fantastic, not only because you can swap ideas and you learn from other people, but you know what? Gardeners in general are really giving. So you'll be able to get cuttings and plants from other people that they've propagated, and that saves you money. It's loads of different ideas. You don't necessarily have to plant your whole garden up in one go. Spend the money on the structure of the garden, i.e. your trees, your shrubs, and then slowly start putting in your selection of herbaceous, your climbers, things like that. Buy plants small, buy 9-centimeter pots instead of 2-liter or 5-liter pots, because that 9-centimeter pots will actually be cheaper. The first year,
you may not be able to afford to do that. So why not get some seeds and actually grow annuals and biennials for a couple of years so that you still have this abundance of colour in your garden, but quite inexpensively. It's all a learning process as well. There are sites where there are contractors who may have hardscape materials that are left over from a job that they need to get rid of. Have a look at those. They might be giving them away, or you might get them at a really generous price. So things like that as well. So there's some really good money-saving ideas in the book as well. And then
when is it out?
It launches on the 21st of March, so not long to go.
It's on pre-sale now then, is it? Yeah.
It's on pre-sale now. And yeah, so you can order it. And as soon as 21st comes around, those books will be going out to all the people who have placed their orders. Yeah.
Really, we will put it in the show notes where to find it. But it's called Your Outdoor Room, How to Design a Garden You Can Live In.
Yes, absolutely. Gardens are personal to every homeowner. It is about making your garden your own space, because it's about how you want to use that space and who else is going to use that space. Have you got children? Have you got pets? Have you got parents living with you, etc., etc.? And therefore, it's about designing a garden that fits your lifestyle. And there, as I say, there are various ideas, but I also talk about creating themes in your garden, because let's face it, our outdoor spaces are part of our home. Often the garden gets quite undervalued, and I think we need to learn to actually look at our gardens as part of our home. And so there's also information about how to do that cohesively, how to make your garden part of your home. Take inspiration from your interiors and try and push those outdoors as well. And that can be something simple as it could be the flooring that you've used inside, and that can be done through either using the same flooring or the same colour. If you've got interiors inside where you might have used a particular paint color, take that color outside into the garden. And that could be through either painting your fences, or it could be through soft furnishings on your furniture, or it could actually be through your planting scheme. So say if you've got yellows or oranges or pinks or purples inside, why not carry those colours through into your planting scheme outside and into your soft furnishings? And then right. some people might prefer to have a Mediterranean garden or a Moroccan themed garden.
I've got a Mediterranean garden because I like the Mediterranean, but I have other parts of my garden which are completely different. I can't wait to get you. You mustn't give too much away, of course, because we need to buy the book. But it's on pre-sale. We'll put it in the show notes and let people know where to get it.
Sure.
We're running out of time. So I've just got three quick questions for you, Manaj, before I let you go.
Yeah.
Your favourite plant or your favourite bloom, what would it be?
Oh my God, bird of paradise, Strelitzia.
Okay.
It reminds me of my childhood in Mombasa. We used to grow it on our balcony. Beautiful. Just gorgeous. Oranges and purples. Lovely.
When you were a child, what did you think you were going to be when you grew up?
A fashion designer. I knew.
Was it? Oh, interesting. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I was always into clothing, fashion. The 1970s were amazing. The flares and the platforms, loved it all. The big wide wing collars. And yeah, I loved all of that. So yeah, I knew that I wanted to be a fashion designer. And I think I ticked that box. Yeah.
Oh, interesting. You did. You definitely did. If you won the lottery now, what would you do?
Okay, do you know what? The first thing that I would probably do is I would probably move country and take my mom to a beautiful, warm country where I could probably afford better care for her. She's 90, and I really do feel that actually people of an older generation do not get the care that they deserve in this country. So that's one of the things that I would do. But the other thing that I would really do is build another house in Crete. I absolutely adore Crete. It is the most gorgeous Greek island, and I would definitely find a plot with sea views and build another home there. But the one thing that I would really love to do is build a school in India. And that would be for children from poor families who couldn't necessarily afford school fees, but it would be lovely to give something back so that these children can have a better future.
Well, I hope you win the lottery. That would be a lovely thing. All of those would be a lovely thing to do.
I honestly believe that, you know, when we get good things in our lives, it's always good to give a little bit back. I think that's really important.
What an interesting chat we've had. We've talked about your background and fashion design. We've moved through the ages onto Chelsea and all the Chelsea gardens you did. We both found that we both knew somebody in the gardening world, which is quite interesting.
Absolutely.
And then moved on to your book, which has just been released. And then moving on, obviously, to what you do if you won the lottery, which would be lovely.
Yeah.
We'd like to see that. I want to thank you for coming over today. That's been really interesting. We could talk forever. We will put in the show notes where everybody can get hold of you and also the title of your book.
Absolutely.
And I look forward to reading it.
Just to let you know, the other thing that I'm about to do is I'm now dedicating my Fridays to doing online consultations as well. So for those people, again, who just want some ideas of what they can do with their outdoor space, I'm running consultations, so you can go onto my website and book yourself a slot with me on a Friday, and I'll be happy to help.
Brilliant. Lovely. Stay in touch. Look forward to the book launch, obviously. And I'll see you soon.
Fantastic. Lovely speaking to you.
And you. Take care.
Bye.
Bye, 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 bye. I look forward to next week's episode. Please don't forget to subscribe and rate and review on your podcast app. We do have some wonderful free resources on our website at thecutflowercollective.co.uk. We also have two free Facebook communities, which we'd love you to join. For farmers or those who want to be flower farmers, we have Cut Flower Farming, Growth and Profit in Your Business. And our other free Facebook group is Learn with the Cut Flower Collective for those starting out on their flower journey. All of the links are below. I look forward to getting to know you all.